There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. Hey, and coming up next hour, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran joins us. We'll talk a little bit about what we normally do, give you a chance to ask the sheriff, but also a presser tomorrow morning for a question about the way government is run in the city of Mobile. We've talked about the Zogby Act in the past. We'll talk about that in depth and do that with Sheriff Cochran coming up at 1 o'clock today. Plus, Todd Stacey joins us right before they gavel back in Montgomery in the legislature. We'll get to that coming up. And I want to say, leading off with this, this is exciting because y'all know, and you've probably been bearing with me for the last week or so, but especially this week so far, yesterday and this morning on the show, my discussion of commodities and oil prices and the price per barrel and where it's going and where it stops. And so, very lucky, we're joined by somebody who is an expert in this. And so it's not just me pontificating or just wondering. We have somebody that has done this over a long time for a living, Jay Young, jayyoung.com, Forbes book author of The Upside of Oil and Gas Investing. And he's the founder and CEO of King Operating Corporation, joins us now on Midday Mobile to do what I always wanted to do, is just have somebody to ask all my oil and natural gas questions to. So, Jay, get ready, and thanks for being on.
Great. Thanks, Sean. Thanks for having me on. And it's jryoung.com, J-A-Y. Because, and the reason why I'm saying this is because if you go to jryoung.com, I would have loved to have had that, but it wouldn't work. So.
Okay, so put an R in there. So J-A-Y-R, and then young.com.
Right, J-R Ewing. Only different.
Yeah, it looks like that. Okay. I'm getting it. So oil and gas, tell us about your experience here. I mean, you got King Operating Corporation. What do y'all do, and how long have you been in the oil and natural gas business?
That's great. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for the question. So, you know, my family has been in this business for over 100 years. You know, so it started my great-grandfather. My great-grandfather was in the oil business. He had 12 kids. And if you're a man, you're in the oil business, and if you're a woman, you're basically married to somebody in the oil business back at those days. Now there's a lot of women that are in the workforce, which is great to have. Back then, you know, it was mostly, you know, men. But so we started drilling for oil and gas and putting projects together. And what we do is value add prospects. So if you read my book, I've got a new book out, Forbes book. It's called The Upside of Oil and Gas Investing. But it talks about, you know, we increase the value of assets and sell them. So we're just like anybody that goes into an asset, sees an undervalued asset, and go in and look for the good in them. And if there's a scalability and an exit strategy that we can put in place, then we'll purchase that asset. We sometimes put together investors' money. We use our money. And our last deal that we started, with $6 million in equity from investors, we grew that to $194 million, you know, through acquiring more equity, more debt, and growing the asset. So, you know, it's people don't even really look at the oil and gas business and go, wow, you can invest in that, and how can you, and what happens? But there is a great business out there, and today's a great day to look at it, to call us, to learn more about it, because oil prices are down, and that's when you invest in oil and gas. when everybody's running.
Well, right, right. Because, I mean, that is my nature in equities, right? And I talk about that a bunch, but I know so little about oil and gas that I wonder if that same sense. I mean, when everybody's panicking and when it's bad, there's a lot of us out there. They're going, okay, how low is this going to go? Because this is going to be, if we believe in whatever it is, and I have a feeling we're going to be still, you know, using oil and natural gas for quite some time. So what are we looking at today in the price per barrel, and where do you think it's going? Where do you think the, I know you've been asked this 25 times this morning, where's the bottom of this?
Yeah, you know, so what I think, and obviously geopolitics is a huge factor, but in this, and you're seeing Saudi Arabia, you know, the last Friday what came on was Saudi Arabia said, hey, guess what? We're going to start taking oil off the market to raise prices because of the coronavirus. Sounded good until Russia said, I don't think so. I'm not doing that.
So yeah,
Saudi
explain
Arabia,
that to folks.
Oil prices dropped down 10%.
Okay.
You know, and Yeah,
I just want to stop you for a second. Explain that before we go past that to folks, because it's something we've been talking about on the political side and the news side, that they're diminished projection for oil and natural gas because of coronavirus fears. But I've been telling everybody that's just part of it, that the bigger part of this story is this battle between Saudi Arabia and Russia. Explain how, like, OPEC works and their relationship with Russia and who can call the price. Can you give us kind of a tutorial in that?
Yeah, sure. So OPEC started back, you know, 50, 60 years ago because they didn't want one country to come in and go, all right, we're going to take oil off the market, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. So it was basically a consortium of different countries, like 14 different companies, including Saudi Arabia. Russia is not in that, OPEC. But anyway, so OPEC says, you know, they're going to do this and that with the prices. So what happens when price goes down and then, or they'll, price goes down, what they'll do is they'll let less supply out, and with less supply then the price will start coming up, because a lot of these countries like Saudi Arabia needs, you know, $60, $80 oil to make money to balance their budgets. They need $60 to $80 oil. So what we do is they come in and they go, because that makes sense, right? I mean, selling less oil for more money,
right?
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, so
yes. Yeah.
Let's just, I mean, try to go back to supply and demand, economics,
right.
101.
Sure.
Supply and demand. So what happened was Saudi Arabia, so they saw oil prices go down. Coronavirus came in and they said, hey, we're going to have a lot less travel, so the global demand for oil goes down. And they were suggesting it'd be 3-4%, or that demand go down, meaning that there's less people that are going to be driving their cars,
sure,
and airplanes, and
sure,
all the different things that go along with this.
So let's cut back production, right, to equal the reduction in demand.
Right, right. So let's quit throwing all this oil in the market. Instead of throwing all this oil in the market, let's come back a little bit and go, okay, we're going to cut production. Okay? These countries can do that. So,
okay.
So Saudi Arabia said OPEC is in for 1 million barrels a day. We need 100 million barrels a day of production in the world to sustain itself or its appetite, if you will.
Right.
How much oil do we need? We need 100 million barrels of oil a day. I know I talk fast, Sean. I try to get a lot of facts out there, but you did a great job by stopping me and saying, hey, go back a little bit. You know, I've done this before,
yeah,
and I want to make sure it's clear.
No, we're following you.
Make sure we cover enough subjects.
Yeah, and I just want to, because I want to talk about that, because we'll get into some of the numbers, what's going on right now. I just like to set the stage. So the stage is set that that OPEC and led by the Saudis are going to reduce production to be commensurate with the reduced demand. But then Russia says no, or Russia says what, Jay? What happens with Russia?
No, exactly. So you're seeing a global demand of 100 million barrels of oil. And Saudi Arabia, by itself, without the help of anybody else, just said, we'll cut it 1 million, and Russia will cut it 500,000. 500,000 barrels a day. And so Russia says, I don't think you should speak for us. We're not in for that. Matter of fact, we're going to increase it, and we're going to sell more oil,
ooh,
on the markets because, you know, I guess they just don't like being told what to do.
Yeah.
It's an ego thing. It's a poke your chest out. You know, you're not going to, and probably hand gestures, you know, and all the other things that go along
right
with this. And just saying, hey, you know what? We're we're not going to do this. We're not going to just all of a sudden go, sure, we'll sell 500,000 barrels a day. So it was more of an ego. So what happened was okay, so now we set the stage. So now they're going to start continuing to throw oil in the market so oil prices go down 10%. Okay?
Yep.
So here we are last Friday afternoon. We're sitting around the office going, oh my gosh, this coronavirus thing, global demand, and oil prices are just going to the tank. It's us as oil and gas producers that make money every day or not on oil and gas production. So we're sitting around scratching our heads going, oh my gosh. So then Sunday night, I'm at the basketball game with my daughter, and all of a sudden I see the headline, those things that hit you in the middle of a basketball game, and on CNBC or somebody saying, Saudi Arabia is going to start throwing some oil on their markets at $8 less a barrel. They're going to start selling it. Instead of selling it at $40, they're going to sell it at $32 a barrel. They're going to throw all this oil in the market and say, hey, who wants to buy our oil at $32 a barrel?
I mean, that is a complete turn. I mean, from the initial discussion that they would reduce production with reduced demand to keep the price high, to them turning around and saying, we're going to flood it with cheap oil.
Exactly. Because of what Russia said, and Russia's not wanting to come to the table, they're doing the hand gestures, and they're going, okay, we're good, we're fine. And so Saudi Arabia says, hey, look, let me tell you something. We got more oil than you do, Russia. And you can't afford, because at $8 a barrel, you're looking like $4 billion less a month that Russia's going to be making in their pocket.
Wow.
Okay? I mean, $4 billion less a month. And,
wow.
I know Putin's worth a couple hundred billion. You know, he's not in Forbes or anything, but he's worth a couple hundred billion. Even, I guess, $4 billion a month kind of stings for him. So now he has said, okay, so today he's coming back going, okay, well, I'm sorry, we missed the memo about the meeting or something, or he's playing like, oh, I don't remember that, but yeah, let's come back and talk again because we don't want oil to go to, yeah, now remember, Russia, Saudi Arabia needs $60 to $70 oil.
Yeah, let's talk. When you say that, there's a certain price per barrel that different for a handful of different reasons it takes. They have to have X number of dollars a barrel to make it worth producing that barrel of oil, correct?
Not necessarily making it produce, because that's the two different things that the consumer or the people that are listening to all these, because they're thinking about break evens.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, you have a break even of $65 a barrel or $60 or whatever else. That's not what that's not what Saudi Arabia needs.
Okay.
What they're talking about is they're going to produce, you know, a million, like right now, Saudi Arabia is going to sell 10 million barrels a day on the open market. So to balance their budget, if they have $30 a barrel, they're going to lose money. At $60 a barrel, that's what they need in their organization. So instead of government, I mean, this is a dictatorship. This mm-hmm. is a, you know, monarchy.
It's a monarchy,
this is
yeah.
I mean, they're not. They have to pay all the bills,
right?
They're paying the bills for all the different people. They're paying health care. They're paying, you know, all the different people in the country to live, and that's what their budgets are. And that's how they make so much money when oil prices go way up. Is because, man, their coffers are definitely filled. I mean, they're making tons and tons of money.
So they,
you know,
They could stand, but they could stand to lose for a short period of time, because it must hurt Russia more than it hurts the Saudis.
Absolutely, because Saudi has so much oil, and they're selling a lot more oil than Saudi Arabia's number two behind the United States. They'll probably go past the United States really soon, because the United States production is going in the tank, which we'll talk about that.
Yep.
On the second half of this show, but Saudi Arabia's going and saying, okay, we got a lot of oil, we'll just throw it on the market. They've talked about 10 million, even going to 12 million barrels a day if they need to, just to drive everybody out and to say to everybody, hey, look, we'll drop these prices way, way down, because we want people to realize that we need to let prices come up. Sell less oil for more money. You know, buy low, sell high in the investment world. You know, in this world, it's, why aren't you buying low or selling less oil? And I've got a newsletter that was sent out to all the media. And I'm sorry, Sean, if you weren't on that. But it talked about, why is oil going up? Well, the number one reason is because right now, with these geopolitics things that we're in here trying to figure out, if we are trying to sell, we're trying to sell less oil for more money.
Yeah, and do that. Hold on, because I mean, I've looked at this. While oil prices will be $65 per barrel by the end of 2020, we'll talk about this more when we come back with J.R. Young. And if you had a specific question of why the oil and natural gas commodities do what they do, you text us right now, 343-0106. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Continue our conversation with J.R. Young, jryoung.com, Forbes book author of The Upside of Oil and Gas Investing. And right now, he's been put in this place by me as he's the professor of oil and gas literature and history all at one time. Jay, we're talking about this as we went to the break here. So this main issue that we're looking at, the super decline for energy stocks and the price of oil per barrel is basically based on this tete-a-tete between the Saudis and the Russians. Is that a fair way? Is that an honest way? I know it's simplified, but is that true?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just a matter of who has the biggest poke out of their chest and what's going to happen and who's going to holler uncle, as you mentioned on the break.
Yeah, so who does holler uncle first in this, in your estimation?
Well, it's a matter of how much reserves they have and how much reserves the Saudi Arabia have and Russia. And you've already seen Russia, you know, at 4,000 or 4 million barrels, actually $4 billion a month. But $4 billion a month, they are making less when you cut their production by $8 a barrel. They're making $4 billion a month. So all of a sudden they're going, wait a minute. Okay, let's come back to the table. Let's talk again.
And at that point, that's why. I mean, you say here in your note here that you see $65 a barrel by the end of this year. So where is it sitting today? What was the latest? I hadn't even refreshed my screen here. You think we are in the
34 a barrel.
Okay.
33 to 34, right.
So you're looking at almost doubling the price by the end of the year.
Yes.
Because the Russians eventually say, okay, that's enough. Let's rethink this.
Well, there's several reasons. There's three big reasons. And one kind of goes into a fourth that I'll talk about, but geopolitics is one. I mean, when you talk about oil and gas and you talk about oil production and how much oil you're producing, you're talking about this and you're saying, okay, how much oil is there out there in the world? And when you, how much oil do we need? What's this basic supply and demand? So when you have, when all of a sudden this thing bulls over and they go, okay, we need $60 oil to produce and to make money, and we need $80. I mean, that's all a part of one reason why oil is going up by the end of the year, because, like I said, you know, Saudi Arabia needs $60 plus a barrel, and if they need it, they're going to get it. And they've proven over the last few days that they can manipulate the price of oil just by turning on and off those spigots. They can do that. Throwing all this oil in the market at $8 less a barrel Sunday night, you saw in the markets, it got killed yesterday. So you're seeing that right now, but it's going to come back, and that's one reason why, is because Saudi Arabia and Russia need it to come back to balance their budgets, number one. Number two is, you know, there's a lot less rigs on the market right now drilling for oil and gas. You're probably seeing it in Mobile, Alabama.
Yeah.
You're probably seeing it all over the country that less rigs are drilling for oil and gas today. Matter of fact, there's like 25% less rigs drilling for oil and gas today than there was a year ago. 25% less, which is not good for the economies, which is another talk all in the next time you have me on.
Yes.
But it's 25% less rigs drilling for oil and gas, which is not good. And three, you know, you're seeing a lot of redeterminations from banks on all this reserve-based lending. And with lower oil prices, they're not your friend. You know, they're your friend when oil prices are at $60, $70, $80 a barrel and production's sky high and everything's going great. These banks and these lenders are your friend. But when prices go the other way, they are not your friend. And so they're going to start calling in those notes saying, no, 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 we liked you at $50 a barrel or $60. We don't like you at $30 and $40. So they're going to start calling these notes really, really soon. And when they do, they're going to have to start selling assets and not as much liquidity on the markets to continue drilling. So not only will rig count down right now, but it's also going to continue to be down this year as people aren't putting up the money to drill more wells.
Jay, I want to talk about that in stateside. Price per barrel of oil, and correct me here, I've always thought it cost a lot more for somebody in the Bakken field to produce the same amount of oil as somebody in Saudi. Is that right? Is it cheaper for the Saudis to produce it than producing it from shale, or is it the same?
Oh, absolutely. No, it every basin is different. And if you're talking about the Bakken, you're talking about the Permian Basin, you're talking about the Marcellus, mm-hmm. you're talking about Eagle Ford. Every basin is different. You know, so the asset, when I say the asset, it's like we do. We participate in the participation or we go and purchase land to go drill, let's say, 30 wells. And then we'll put together the economics to drill a well and say, okay, well, if it costs $6.5 million to go and drill a complete one well, how much oil is going to come on the market on that project in the next couple of years? And then what's the price of oil we're going to be getting? Those are economics. Those three things. You can drill a well for less money when oil prices are down. The oil is about the same, but the frack techniques are getting better, which means there's more oil coming out of the ground faster, which is good. And number three is something we can't control, which is the price of oil. Now, so those three make up an internal rate of return. And every basin is different. It's probably so different in Saudi Arabia than it is here. I know I've got some friends that have production in Iraq, and they've got a big production over there. Their wells come in at 3,000 to 4,000 or 5,000 barrels a day, and they just stay forever, where our wells may only do 500 to 1,000 barrels a day. They'll cost less money, and we're a lot more friendly. I don't know how much money they've gotten out of Iraq. I know they put a lot of money in, probably $100 million or $200 million in, but I'm not sure how much money's coming back to them. So I know that's one of the things that they concern themselves with. But economics per basin, per well, yes, huge difference.
All right. Well, this is, but you feel, and we're about to have to go to the hard break here, have to get you back sometime, but your feeling is that by the end of 2020, we're looking at $65 a barrel again.
Yes, I do.
Jay Young,
JRYoung.com. Don't worry.
Okay.
Don't panic. Don't worry.
No panic, no worry. So, Jay, thanks for your time. Thanks for being on the show. All right, coming right back, Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, joins us just about half an hour before they gavel back into session in Montgomery. We'll go to Montgomery next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. They're getting ready to gavel back in Montgomery. So we check in with our buddy Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. So they're not going to do like Florida, where the House, I think, in Florida is not meeting because of what, coronavirus concerns? None of that at Goat Hill, right?
Yeah, none of that yet. Let's hope it doesn't get to that. Of course, you know, we haven't had any confirmed coronavirus cases in Alabama, so that would probably be pretty premature. But no, today is actually the 11th day of the legislative session. You know, they have 30 meeting days and 105 calendar days to meet for those 30 days. So really, we're already a third of the way through this legislative session. I told you it was going to go quick, and every year it does. Here we are on day 11. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But, yeah, they'll gavel in here in about 30 minutes.
All right. They got like a spring break or something coming up, don't they?
That's next week, yeah. Usually it coincides with as many school districts as possible. Of course, the Montgomery school districts, because that's where all the staff where their kids go to school. So usually it coincides with that.
All right, so let's talk about a couple of things. We'll dig back into things going on in Montgomery, but let's go first to one of the big stories, and that's the latest polling out here in the runoff for Republican for Senate. Signal, you're in your email this morning. That's a group. That's a polling group I've heard of before. Signal, who is Signal, and what do they ask in their poll, and what do they come back with as results?
Yeah, Signal's a polling firm. It's run by my buddy Brent Buchanan. I've known him for a long time. They're Montgomery-based, but also based in Washington, so they've got a foot in both worlds. But well-respected. In fact, they were kind of congratulated for being very close to the final results back in 2016 and in 2018. So a good group generally. So they wanted to poll the runoff. Hey, who's going to win between Jeff Sessions and Tommy Tuberville? And according to this poll, which was conducted March 6th through 8th, 51.5% say Tuberville. So almost 52% say Tuberville, and 39.5% say Jeff Sessions. That leaves 9% undecided, but a clear advantage for Tommy Tuberville, according to this poll, heading into the runoff.
All right, I want to talk about the first of all, let's talk about that number and the undecideds in this. And this is the hardest question. Of course, I ask it to you every time. How are those that the people that did not have their candidate win in the primary? How do they, first of all, do they show back up? And if they do, who breaks? How many get the advantage of the break? Is it more Tuberville? Is it more Sessions?
Well, that's a good question. And so when I was looking at the cross tab, I went right to that. Where do Bradley Burns voters go? Because there were plenty of them down in Mobile and Baldwin counties. In fact,
huge.
Bradley Burns won Mobile County 53% and Baldwin 57%. So yeah. Huge margins. Where do those voters go? According to this poll, those that identified as Burns voters, 45% said that they would prefer Tuberville. And 38% said they would prefer Jeff Sessions. That leaves 17% undecided. I was surprised by this result.
Me
I
too.
I sort of assumed that a lot of more Burn people would naturally go to Sessions, but this, and look, this is a very small sample, but as far as the, not the overall poll, but this particular cohort, right? If you're a Burn voter, that was only like 20% or 21% of those polled. So it's still a small sample. You can't take too much out of that. But it's still what it is. I mean, they're saying Tuberville, 45 to 38. I think that is pretty significant. I would have assumed Sessions would be running away with it. And,
yep.
And therein lies the problem. There's a lot of assumptions made about who's going to show up and who they're going to vote for. Until we actually test it, until we know what we're talking about, you know, it's anybody's guess. Another really important statistic, they asked voters, do you agree or disagree that President Donald Trump opposes Jeff Sessions, right? Just trying to test out,
mm-hmm.
What do you think? There's been some tweets, but there hasn't been any explicit sort of condemnation. 45% of all those polled said that they thought that Donald Trump opposed Jeff Sessions. Only 15% disagreed. That left a pretty wide margin for undecideds and people that didn't agree or disagree, but 45%, and of those 45% that say, yes, I agree that Sessions is opposed by the president, 67% of those people plan on voting for Tuberville, and that's your number right there. 67% of those who are following the president and think he opposes Sessions, they're going for Tuberville.
Now, okay. That is big here, and you're right. I lumped myself in with the group that assumed that Jeff Sessions would do quite well with Bradley Burn voters. But let's talk about maybe geographically where it may be better for Sessions and other. And I look at AL1 and AL2 having a lot better chance of turnout for the runoff, right? I mean, you look at around the rest of the state, you know, they may not be as motivated to come out. And does that skew this? I mean, I know you can't really put that in a poll, but does that skew it, do you think?
Well, if there's one criticism I would have of this poll, I think it probably did undersample Mobile.
Like they all do, Todd. They all
well,
undersample.
Look, you know,
I'm not a pollster. But when I see only 14.5% from that Mobile market, I don't know. That seems to me that could be a little different. Some people do polling differently, and so you know that may have just been Mobile and Baldwin counties, not including the Escambias and Clarks and Washingtons. But if anything, it could have undersampled Mobile. We know that Sessions does well in Mobile. He needs to, at least. But again, I look back at that where the Bradley Byrne voters are going, and they're just not going to Sessions in any kind of wave fashion that he needs.
But that's across the state, right?
That's statewide.
It could be a different critter down here. I mean, obviously, they're factored in. But if you looked at, if you had some kind of, you know, pullout that was just Mobile and Baldwin counties, I wonder how different that would look.
Yeah, I think we could probably do that if we get really down deep into the crosstabs. I don't have them right in front of me, but there's no question Sessions does better in Mobile and Baldwin counties. If he is to win this race, he's got to turn those Byrne voters who were solidly for Bradley, he's got to turn them into not just voting again, right? You got to turn them back out to the polls, which will, you know, at least there's a big congressional race going on, but he's got to turn them into voting for him. That's easier said than done, and we can make a lot of assumptions about who that Byrne voter is and what decisions they would make based on this polling. That maybe we've been assuming the wrong things, and probably the biggest factor here is once again we have a poll that is not favorable for Jeff Sessions.
Yep.
This only increases the likelihood that the president is going to get more involved, tweet more. We saw that the day after the election, right? He dunked on Sessions just for not getting, just for being in second place. So, to me, if I was the Sessions campaign, I would be really worried with this showing a vulnerability to only encourage Trump to continue to dunk on him.
That's interesting. So it wouldn't be that if Jeff Sessions was doing well, that Trump would get in to try to, you know, knock that down some. It's the fact that if he senses the vulnerability, that's when you think it's tempting for President Trump to come in and start going after Sessions.
Oh, absolutely. And just look back to 2017, right? I mean, I think if they had to do it over again, they would not have gotten nearly as involved in the Luther Strange race as they did. But here's an opportunity. Okay, look, not only can I, you know, win again, I can be potentially influential in this race, but get the last laugh at Jeff Sessions, who he clearly has displeasure toward. Fair or not, it's there. And so, yeah, I think it's much more likely that he either endorses Tuberville or dunks on Sessions or both. The more polling and other information, the more vulnerable that Sessions is.
All right, coming right back. More with Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. We'll talk about how to get his email in your inbox every weekday morning.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right back at it. It is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5, online at FMTalk1065.com. Hey, and my buddy Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. And if people arrive there on the website, how do they get signed up for your email?
It's really easy, Sean. And people have been signing up a lot throughout this election. And now that we're in the legislative session, it's a great time. It's really easy. Just go to aldailynews.com. That's the homepage, and you'll see subscribe right there at the top. Just click subscribe, enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. It's free, no cost at all, but you'll get that morning email that keeps you updated on all the things that are going on from here in Montgomery up to Washington, political and government. You'll want to be on the list.
All right, let me ask you, from somebody who has been on, worked in campaigns and in offices and in the state level and the national level, what would you be doing if you were there and you saw these numbers? You're in the Sessions camp. What would you do between now and the 31st to get those people? I mean, you got to get them to the polls and you got to change some minds, obviously, by this polling. I mean, what would you do in a simple way? What would you be doing?
They've got to change the narrative. It's been nothing but Trump, right? It's been so much Trump, and that's a losing playing field. You've got to You've got a fight on the playing field that you can win on. The Trump thing is a losing battle because at the end of the day, the president just doesn't like Jeff Sessions. So find your own. You know, maybe talk about some issues that matter to voters, issues that are hometown issues. Obviously, he has to pick up the Mobile area. It's critical. So let's talk about the port. Let's talk about Red Snapper. Let's talk about shipbuilding and some of these things that actually really do matter. Talk about the bridge, whatever it is that can really, you know, make the difference. Because Jeff Sessions can talk about all those issues with no problem at all. He's fluent.
Yep.
He knows it like the, you know, backwards and forwards. Whereas Tuberville, that's not a field that he wants to play on. He can't win that, and he knows it.
Yeah, he doesn't know that. He doesn't know. Well, I mean, policy is one question, but specifics around here, it's already been shown, this isn't opinion, but factually, that he's just not well-versed on what happens in Southwest Alabama.
Well, I wrote a story about it that he, you know, when we did our interview, that, you know, he just doesn't, it doesn't matter to him. He doesn't care about your nuance. He's very effective at just kind of pivoting back to Trump and saying he supports Trump and that's okay. And you know what? For a lot of voters, that's enough. Right, he's not a politician. He supports Trump. That's enough. But there's plenty of voters who do want more. There are plenty of voters who demand more out of their public servants. So Jeff Sessions needs to appeal to those people. Another thing is Bradley Byrne. I don't think it's really that effective to have endorsements. Like if they had a big press conference where Bradley Byrne hugged Jeff Sessions and okay, I'm endorsing him. I don't think that's necessarily all that effective. What would be effective though is a more surgical type of endorsement where, you know, Bradley would maybe make some phone calls on Sessions' behalf, right? Do some of those robocalls. I know we all hate them, but they're actually effective, especially when they go to answering machines and stuff like that, saying, hey, I'm Bradley Byrne. If you voted for me, I want you to consider voting for Jeff Sessions. Something like that. Also some mail. If you could pinpoint, and they can, you can pinpoint those Bradley Byrne voters, pinpoint them with mail with an endorsement piece, that would be effective. Something surgical like that, and specifically focused on the Mobile area, not necessarily the rest of the state. Those are just a couple of things I think the Sessions campaign could try to get this thing back on track. They're attacking Tuberville. They have to. They really have no choice. The problem is, because he's a non-politician, he's a different type of politician, it's really tough to land those blows.
There's no record, you know, in political, there's football record, but there's no record, and he's not on record saying this, that, or the other. He's not, you know, I mean, you get things he said while he's out campaigning, whether it's for this seat or, you know, when he's thinking about the governorship. But yeah, there's not, that's why I think the questions about where he lives, where he votes, those kind of things come up because, yeah, can't go back and see what his vote was on this, that, or the other.
Right, and look, football coaches, they live by different rules than the rest of us, right? These guys are celebrities, they're gods in some respects. So he already gets to live by these different rules. It's just difficult to attack him on the conventional rules of politics. So maybe they can find it, maybe they can find that issue or that crack in his armor that could be exposed. I don't know, but as far as selling himself, this could be his last campaign. Probably is his last campaign. Jeff Sessions and his advisors really have to find a way to change the narrative. Fight on the playing field that you can win on. It's not Trump. They tried that. I think just reminding people of his interactions with Trump probably didn't do him any favors because all he went was down in the polls. So find something else and change that narrative because it's 3 weeks away, but you remember how quickly those last 3 weeks went. So it's coming quick. They've got to do it now.
All right, let's switch and talk about some state politics. Two things, both of these things around schools. First of all, you and I had a disagreement on Amendment 1. And Amendment 1, the most decisive thing that happened, I think, on Super Tuesday was the defeat of Amendment 1.
Oh, yeah. Do I owe you something?
Did you do.
Did we
you
bet
do.
A beer or
yep.
something? Yeah,
yep.
Okay.
Yep. So you lose. No, talk to me about that. Not only was it a defeat, it was a big defeat. Now, jeez. was that about KIV? Was that about schools? Was that about don't tell me what to do? What's your take?
Well, I wouldn't put it directly on KIV. Most polls show her with a pretty strong approval rating statewide. I know there's some stuff down there in Mobile. Look, I wrote about this today. People aren't naturally going to give up their right to vote on things unless there is some compelling reason why. And what happened with this amendment is nobody ever gave them a reason why. We talked about it a little bit. But look, they passed this thing a year ago. There was never a concerted, you know, comprehensive effort to sell this thing to voters. And I go back, there were people saying, well, you know, just don't talk about it much and people will just vote yes. That's silly.
Yep.
Finally, at the very end, like last 2 weeks, there were some kind of last-ditch efforts to educate voters. That was way too little too late. So, look, if they're going to, if the legislature really believes in something, which they did on this, they passed it overwhelmingly. If they really believe in something, they owe it to voters to at least explain it. Otherwise, we're just wasting time. And in this state, we have to be governed by a referendum a lot. A lot of what passes in the legislature has to go up for a vote. If we're going to do this again, which we will, we'll be here again. So let's have a better conversation about it. Let's think twice about what we put on the ballot and make sure that it's not just a complete losing battle. I think voters owe it to themselves and the future to be more educated about things, but I think it's also on state leaders to listen better and to communicate back home the goals and the visions that they have on all these state policies.
All right, Don, I want to ask, well, this will jump back. Well, I'll ask that one at the end. It's jumping back to the Senate question. So, okay, the other part of it is, and people would see in the email today, a move here to allow teachers to serve in the legislature. Did I get that right, this 377, the House bill?
Yeah, and I don't think this is going anywhere. It's a state representative from Prattville, pretty young guy, wasn't around for the double-dipping scandal. And there's no, I don't think anybody thinks there's something wrong with a school teacher serving as a lawmaker, except for just the obvious logistics, right? I mean, how can you spend 3 months out of the year in Montgomery and actually be an effective classroom teacher? But it was part of the overall double-dipping ban. You had lawmakers that had one, two, three jobs at these community colleges making hundreds of thousands of dollars for no work. It was a patronage system. People went to jail because of it.
Yep.
So I don't see them rolling this back at all. I think it's I think he may find that out pretty quickly.
All right. So, okay, we got time. This last one here. Well, a couple of Tuberville questions here. This one from the text line. I haven't seen Tuberville campaigning at all down here. Am I missing something? Sessions is on your show all the time. Where's Tommy Tuberville? I've told y'all before. He was on once in September. We have kept open communications. If he wants to call and be on the show, we've kept it open. He just does not come on with me. So, and then Jason says, ask Todd. Okay, this is loaded. Ask Todd how he thinks a mediocre coach that has no position on the issues and won't speak publicly has gotten so much traction. That's loaded.
Well, I'll tell you what. You just mentioned him not coming on the show, and there's a story up now that says, you know, he's not going to agree to a debate either. Somebody called it prevent defense, you know, for, to use the coaching metaphor.
There you go.
Look, you get a poll like this, of course you go into prevent defense. I think you're going to see a lot of that. And on the other side of that, you're probably going to see a lot of aggression from Sessions because he's got no choice. He's got to get it done.
So there you go. There it is. All right. Once again, people want to get signed up for the email. How do they do it?
It's real easy. aldailynews.com. Click subscribe. I would love to have you as a subscriber, and now is a great time.
All right. Good stuff, Todd. We'll talk again soon.
All right, be good, Sean.
All right, you too. As they're getting ready to gavel back into session in Montgomery, you can keep checking in with Todd for what happens over the next 3 days, 4 days total today, tomorrow, and no, I'm not good with math. 3 days, that's right. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. That's right. That's three, Sean, not four. All right, joining me next hour, Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran. Your chance to ask the sheriff. Plus, we got a lot to talk about here, too, and an idea and a press conference coming up tomorrow that the sheriff is involved in. We'll talk more about this when we get back, about growing Mobile.